And now, it's BC Food and Wine Radio. Here's Anthony Gismondi.
Hello, British Columbia. I'm Anthony Gismondi, and welcome to today's show. On today's show, we're going to talk about what everyone is talking about in the BC wine industry, the devastating and possible long-term effects of the record January low temperatures on the vines. But we're going to do more than just talk about it. We are going to speak with Richard De Silva today, the vigneron and proprietor, co-proprietor at De Silva Vineyards and Winery. And he's going to walk us through some of the trials and tribulations of farming and maybe some of the solutions available to turn this situation around as we move forward, not only this year, but, you know, over the next few decades, because obviously it needs to be addressed on a long-term basis. It's going to be a super frank discussion. You won't want to miss it. Richard is a very engaging guy, and he knows his stuff. His family's been farming in the Okanagan since 1956. So you won't want to miss that. Also on the show today, we've got a restaurant focus here in our studio, hometown of Vancouver, with Mike Gaiman. He's the managing partner of the Watson on Main Street in Vancouver. We're going to talk to Mike about some of the things that create the vibe and the interest that you find on Main Street and what he's got going on in the Watson. And there's a great story behind the name of the Watson that you won't want to miss as well. Also, H.J. Cha, she's a wine contributor at Gismondi on Wine, a judge, and pursuing her Master of Wine in the next coming weeks, where she will be going after it for good. I hope she's going to get it this time. We're going to explore the Lunar New Year from a Korean point of view with H.J. She grew up in Korea, has lived in California, of course, now lives and works in Penticton, British Columbia. We'll give you some very interesting Korean food and wine matches that you can explore on your own at home. It's a very cool event. We always talk about Chinese New Year. This year, we're going to start with the Lunar New Year. But up next, Harry Hertzschig. You heard the music off the top of the show. He's the executive director of the Vancouver International Wine Festival, and he joins us to talk about last-minute tickets to the dinners, the tasting room, and along with some pro tips to smooth out your journey for the arrival of the Italians, all 71 wineries that will be at the show this year. This is BC Food and Wine Radio. I'm Anthony Gismondi, and you are set to go.
There's more to come. This is BC Food and Wine Radio with Anthony Gismondi.
Penticton, the hub of the South Okanagan. The place for winter adventure and Okanagan wine. Enjoy champagne powder and après-ski at Apex Mountain or Baldy Resort, or step into cross-country skiing at Nickel Plate Nordic Center. After a day in the snow, slow down and experience one of over 80 nearby wineries with an intimate winter wine tasting. Before you go to Penticton, make sure to check the website for information on tasting room hours, winter highway, and ski hill conditions. And for more trip inspiration, go to visitpenticton.com.
Attention wine connoisseurs. Iron Gate Auctions are bringing you the chance to indulge in some of the most exquisite back vintage wines from Canada's most exclusive private collections. Each bottle sold individually so you can pick and choose to your heart's content. With an average of 3,000 available per auction, there is something for everyone at all price points. And the best part? Inexpensive temperature controlled delivery available right to your door. Visit irongateauctions.com to start bidding now.
Diora, the culmination of a more than 30-year vineyard-to-bottle journey in the Santa Lucia Highlands and the family-owned San Bernabe Estate in Monterey, California. Diora's fruit from their vineyard flourishes in the radiant Monterey midday sun, while refreshing breezes coax the complex flavors found in every drop. Diora, indulgence begins in the vineyard, now available at select liquor stores across BC. Find out more at dioravines.com.
It's BC Food and Wine Radio. Now, here's Anthony Gismondi.
Dance the night away. My heart could be burning, but you won't see it on my face. Watch
Hello, British Columbia, and welcome to the show with a shout-out to all 25 cities listening across the province on the BC Food and Wine Radio Network, including Bounce Radio in Penticton, Summerlin in Escoyos. Let's say we want to give you a big thank you today for your continued support of our podcast, which listeners enjoy, and our stories. They go around the globe, so there's a lot of interest, and it wouldn't happen without all you listeners. So I just want to thank you off the top today. We open the show this week with Harry Hertzshaag. He's the executive director of the Vancouver International Wine Festival. Harry, many of the dinners are sold out. There's a few left. You can still get some seminar tickets. Minglers might be the way to go. What's available? What can we tell people about this Vancouver International Wine Festival, which is coming very quickly at the end of the month?
We've got a couple of dinners still available. Gerard Bertrand's Languedoc. A dinner at the Keg Steakhouse, all in $145 on the Tuesday evening.
Yeah.
Over at the Provence Marina Side, a family tradition of excellence with Lang Twins Family Winery and Vineyards. That'll be a great dinner on the Wednesday evening. And then a couple of parties. People love parties. We have a couple on Tuesday and Wednesday evening, both priced at the ridiculously low price, $69 on the Tuesday night, featuring the Italians, Discover della Venezia, DOC, Pinot Grigio party, kind of a aperitivo with masks and all kinds of fun things. And then on Wednesday evening, the Californians are going to be up on the North Shore at the Pipe Shop at the Lower Lonsdale with the California Wine Sunfest. And then there's a couple of seminars on the Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Gerard Bertrand on the Thursday, Golden State Vineyard Visions on Friday, and the Global Crew on Saturday. And like all our seminars, the panelists are the owners, winemakers, senior representatives of all the wineries. You get to hear up close and personal with these panelists about how they make the wine, how they feel about wine, and wine culture.
Yeah. You know, Harry, sometimes I think that when you look at, you know, what's sold and what hasn't sold, but often I go to an event I know is good, but most people don't know much about the winery, and then they're so shocked about how great the event is. For instance, Gerard Bertrand now is one of the leading lights in Europe. His winery has been awarded, you know, Winery of the Year, etc. But mostly, Gerard is he cultivates and owns the most biodynamic vineyards in the world today. This guy is on it. You know, his theme is "You be the change," or you know, just make things happen that will help the earth. And his wines are fantastic. So that dinner at the Keg will be a fun night too. And you know, and at the Keg, so it's not going to be too stuffy there. It's going to be a lot of fun. So people should have a look at that. I would go. The other dinner was at the French restaurant. Now it's just jumped out of my head.
Provence Marina Side.
As soon as someone says Provence Marina Side, I go, because the quality of the food is outstanding. It's going to be a great night. So people should jump on those. They're going to disappear quickly anyways. And go to a seminar. You know, the festival used to be about seminars. Now it's about dinners. But, you know, seminars are where you learn stuff and you can have some fun. So that would be my take on that. Our guest is Harry Hertzshaag. He's the executive director of the Vancouver International Wine Festival. Harry, I wanted to talk today. I wanted to sort of you to help out, and I can help. I can join in to help out the people that are going to the show with some useful tips. Like, let's start with the whole business of checking in coats and all that. What do we do with all that? How easy is it? How hard is it? How early do you have to be there to do all that?
I think it's wise to come to the session about a half an hour beforehand. Because the convention center, it's a big building. Maybe you need to find parking. Maybe you're coming in by transit. There's a coat check. Yeah. It is still chilly at the end of February. But also we get your tickets ahead of time so that we put you in a large pen so that you're already processed. You've got your code in, and you can read the festival program while you're in the lineup. You can look at the wine festival app. And then when the doors open, you're totally checked in and you're in it.
You like just walk
you're
in.
Going on at 7 o'clock. Yeah. You're in at 7:01.
Yeah. Maybe plan to have something to eat before the show as well.
Yeah. So there's lots of great restaurants in around the convention center with happy hours and get a bite to eat. Don't go on an empty stomach. Yes, there's little nibbles and bites in the tasting room, but it's a wine tasting event, and that's what you want to focus on. You want to focus on connecting with the owners and principals. Have a little food in your belly before you go, and always hydrate, I think, is also important, and there's going to be water stations throughout the tasting room.
Yeah. And what about the spit bucket situation? I mean, I know things changed at the pandemic and that. How will it be set up in the room this year?
Well, the feedback through the pandemic
for people that
is
spit.
That, the agents and the wineries don't want the dump buckets on their table because there is a bit of a splash.
And
it does, you know, over 3 days, you know, that tablecloth gets a little messy. So there's going to be 10 what we call rinse stations. And we'll hand out lots of spit cups so that you can, you don't have to drink the whole thing. You have a taste. You don't you can maybe even swallow it, but you don't have to drink the whole thing. You can dump out what's left in the wine. And so there'll be lots of stations around, and you don't have to drink the whole thing.
Yeah. You clutch your little cup, like it's like a coffee cup, and then you're safe. And then you just dump it out at the bigger station when it fills up. And I like that idea. That leaves the table also because people congregate around the spit bucket, and then you can't get into the table. So I think everything will flow a little bit better. Speaking of flow, like we're back in the big room where there's always plenty of room. With the number of wineries, you suspect there's going to be a lot of distance between rows, etc.?
Well, we've got lots of exhibitors as well, and we have lots of cocktail tables so people can put their glass down for a bit. We've got bistro tables so they can sit down, and of course there'll be the the station where you're going to be interviewing all the principals. So there's lots of places to hang out, and of course there's the on-site BC liquor store where every wine poured in the room is available for sale. So there's lots to do in the room, and there's going to be lots of elbow room as well. So, and plus, if you go on a Saturday afternoon, you're going to have that amazing view of the North Shore through those windows.
Yeah, fantastic. By the way, the liquor store has all of the wines that are in the show, most of them, and some of them they don't have a huge quantity of, so they sell out sooner than later, although they say they keep them for every day. But if you're there on a Thursday or Friday, my recommendation is to get into the store early if you're looking for the very unique wines that don't have a lot of quantity here in the marketplace. I can say that looking at the list in the festival, a lot of the wines actually being poured are not in liquor stores. So it's a sort of a bonanza for people looking for new wines.
3/4 of the wines in the taste room are unlisted or what the industry calls spec listings. So these are wines that are new to the market. You're not going to be able to get them anywhere else, perhaps at the odd private store or a restaurant here or there. And you made a really good point. Don't wait till the end of the evening when it's really crowded in the tasting room. Go early, purchase the wine, put it in the bottle check, and you can have those wines shipped free of charge directly to your local liquor store anywhere in British Columbia. There's no other show in the world that does that.
No. Earlier this year at Gizmani on Wine, we did a video with you and Filippo Bartolotta. People should check that out. Tell us a bit about Filippo. He is your honored spokesperson this year.
He is a lot of fun. He's going to be...
and he's very Italian.
He's very Italian. And he says this year, I love this promo where he goes, it's going to be bonkers. I love that. And he is leading a seminar called Challenge of the Red Titan, some big Italian reds on the Friday afternoon between 5:15 and 6:45. And there's still a few tickets left. And so there's lots of great Italian personalities coming to town. It's going to be a lot of fun the last week of February or first weekend in March. So much to look forward to.
And Filippo, like in the video, he talks about, both he and I agree that Italy is having a moment, if you like, right now, globally. And so he talks a bit about why Italian wines are so popular at the moment and how they've managed to grow their business worldwide, something which should be a big interest to British Columbian wineries who at the moment are struggling and need a strategy for that. And who better to look at than people that have been around for hundreds of years making wine. So I like that combination. Harry, I just, for our listeners, our newsletter at Gizmani on Wine goes out February 22nd. So there'll be a lot of details in that newsletter about the wines that are in the tasting room and where you should go, etc. And right now you have until February 11th to win a pair of tickets to the sold out Pika Kitchen Party, which is great fun, which has moved to Sunday this year, March 3rd. It's sponsored by Gizmani on Wine. So we're giving away a couple of tickets. If you go over to the website, you can sign up and get into the Pika Kitchen Party. That's on Granville Island. Plenty of coverage in the Vancouver Sun as well. Look forward to it, Harry. This is the point where I always say get some sleep. And get ready because, it comes quickly and it goes quickly.
I'm pacing myself and I'm really looking forward to being at the end of February again. The city's just going to be going crazy on Italians and wines. And, over since 1979, with people like yourself and your show and the local community and industry, it's important to build a really strong wine and food culture for Vancouver. And we're doing that.
Thanks so much, Harry. See you inside the room.
Ciao.
Okay, ciao. Harry Hertzshakes, the executive director of the Vancouver International Wine Festival. Still ahead, Penticton-based H.J. Cha. She works at Gizmani on Wine as a contributor, a judge, and she's a master wine candidate, but she joins us today to discuss the Lunar New Year.
There's lots more still ahead. This is the BC Food and Wine Radio Network.
Your favorite wines delivered right to your door. It's easy when you become a Liber Estates Rebel. Rebel Wine Club members enjoy regular shipments of Liber wines for your cellar, along with complimentary tastings, VIP treatment at the winery, and more. And with easy and convenient online ordering, your wine will be at your door before you know it. Discover more at liberestates.com. Simply great wine.
Hi, this is Paige Schultz, marketing manager at Visit Penticton. Apex Mountain, just 30 minutes away from Penticton, is calling you this winter. Joining me is Kat Bulkin, sales and marketing manager at Apex Mountain Resort. Kat, what makes Apex such a great hidden gem?
Apex offers incredible terrain with over 80 runs, half that are advanced and 4 terrain parts, plus short lift lines on our 4 ski lifts and dry champagne powder. We also host some fantastic events, such as our annual Brewski Festival.
Brewski, that sounds fun. Can you tell us more about that?
There's over 20 breweries, which will be showcasing their craft beers all through the Gumbarrel, and you're invited to sample as many as you want throughout the evening. Paired with food from the Gumbarrel Saloon and taking place on March 2nd from 6 to 10 p.m.
Amazing. Thanks, Kat.
You're welcome.
Plan your winter vacation to Penticton now. For information on Brewski and all other upcoming festivals, events, and activities in Penticton, go to visitpenticton.com.
Your next corporate event or retreat deserves the best. The Watermark Beach Resort. With conference spaces to host large or small gatherings, they can create your perfect event or gathering. Enjoy the culinary excellence of 15 Park Bistro, open daily for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Make sure to follow them on Instagram and Facebook at 15 Park Bistro for the latest updates on their brand new dinner series. To make a reservation or learn more about events at Watermark, just go to watermarkbeachresort.com.
This is BC Food and Wine Radio. Now, here's Anthony Gizmondi.
It's me. Hi, I'm the problem. It's me. At tea time, everybody agrees.
Hello, British Columbia. Our guest is H.J. Cha. She's a Gizmondi on Wine contributor, judge, and Master of Wine candidate. Which is a lot to have on your plate, but she's here today to discuss the Lunar New Year, which begins Friday, February 10th. H.J. was born and raised in Korea, lived in California, is married to a Canadian, and now lives in Penticton, raising 2 children and staying as busy as anybody could be with 2 kids. H.J., how are you today? Thanks for joining us.
Hi, Tony. Excited to be here. Thanks for having me.
Well, we're happy to have you. Typically in British Columbia, at least in my time, we're more familiar with Chinese traditions surrounding the Lunar New Year, which begins the first new moon of the year. Can you tell us how Korean Lunar New Year celebrations and traditions might differ from the Chinese traditions?
Yeah, just one thing to correct. I only have 1 kid yet. So.
Oh, there you go. Well, yeah. The Master of Wine, we'll call that the other kid. Trying to get that.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Chinese, I think they celebrate 15 days, very long. It's more of Chinese custom to celebrate it for 15 days. In Korea, it's a 3-day celebration, usually extended to 5 days with a weekend. In Korea, yeah, we call the day Seollal, which means it's the day you become 1 year older. So traveling to one's hometown is an important part of it, like in China.
Oh, wow.
Korea has a population of about 51 million.
Yeah.
And about this holiday, over half the population travels to celebrate. So expect massive traffic jams.
Yeah, yeah. I would think so.
Yeah.
That's like all of Canada traveling.
Yeah, exactly. Over 30 million. Yeah. One of the things that excited me about Seollal growing up was getting new clothes and new shoes to wear on New Year's Day. So shopping before the holiday is always a fun memory.
Yeah.
And food is also a crucial part of the holiday. Cooking a huge amount of food can be both fun and exhausting.
Yeah,
and traditionally, it's done by female members. Things are now changing, though.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, the men are getting exhausted, too, cooking? Or?
Yeah.
That sounds good. Yeah. Our guest is H.J. Cha. She's a judge, a Master Wine candidate, and, of course, a contributor at Gizmondi on Wine. But we are talking about the Lunar New Year in Korea. Let's talk a bit about the food. What are some of the traditional dishes? And I thought it might be kind of fun, because you're a wine wizard, that we could maybe pair up some B.C. wines with them. So let's talk about some of these traditional dishes.
Yeah, I want to talk about the first meal of the year that we typically have. We typically have tteokguk as our first meal of the year. It's sliced rice cake soup in a beef broth, but it's more like gnocchi, warm and chewy. It's a superstition. You need to have a bowl of tteokguk to officially become a year older in Korea.
Well, that's fantastic. And what about a wine? I know soup is hard to match to a wine, but what would you think would go with that?
Right. Yeah, and it's also first meal of the day, so you don't typically start drinking that early. But it's a holiday, so I guess it's okay to start the festivities a little earlier.
Not.
So
yeah.
I would pair it with a clean, pure, almost neutral style of white wine that can highlight the delicate flavors of the meal.
Yeah.
A great example would be the Wild Goose Pinot Blanc. Pinot Blanc is such an underrated grape, and Wild Goose makes such a textbook Pinot Blanc with crisp acidity and zesty citrus fruit and delicate floral notes.
Oh, man, I love that. And you're right, Pinot Blanc is very undervalued, underrated and undervalued in British Columbia. But so that's a good wine for people to check out anytime with a number of different dishes. So good way to go. Okay, what's next?
Jeon is another. It's commonly translated as savory pancake, but it's lightly pan-fried fritter of sliced vegetables, fish or meat, and a flour batter. Pajeon is one kind of jeon, and it's made of green onion and seafood. It's probably one of the most popular dishes you can find in Korean restaurants, and it's also very simple to make at home. Let me know if you need a recipe.
Yeah. Well, actually, I just want to eat it at the moment. But when you say pan-fried, like pan-fried fritter, so I immediately think sparkling wine. What do you suggest?
Of course, yes. It doesn't matter if it's deep-fried, pan-fried, anything fried is a perfect pairing for a lively, sparkling wine. I would go for the Blue Mountain Gold Label for its consistently amazing quality.
Yeah, the standard, I think, for most people, BC. That's probably the best introductory, one of the best introductory sparkling wines made in the world. I think if you line them all up, it would be right in there.
The benchmark, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, the names are not easy to pronounce, but let's keep going.
Yeah. Next one is japchae. It's a sweet potato starch noodles with various vegetables and meat. Yep. Healthy, gluten-free, and more importantly, just delicious.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
And what would you pair with that, with the soy sauce and ribs?
Well, for japchae, this is noodle dish. So this noodle dish includes assorted vegetables and cucumber skin and carrot, onion, as well as marinated meat. So you need the wine with a little more flavors and weight. Kalmina's Unicus Grüno Veltliner has delicate spiciness, and that's inherent in the grape. But
yeah,
the wine also has richness that can pair well with this dish.
Yeah, the Kalmina Unicus Grüner Veltliner with this noodle dish. That sounds great. I mixed that up at the start. We were going to talk about beef ribs and soy sauce. What do you call that one?
Yeah, that's Kalbitzim. Kalbitzim is braised beef ribs with assorted vegetables. It's my personal favorite and my mom's specialty, actually. This is the dish she would make on special occasions like my birthday or holidays. I often cook it at home, but it never comes close to my mom's.
Oh, well, moms sometimes do stuff better. Our guest is H.J. Cha. She lives up in Penticton and works in the wine business, but we're talking about Korean Lunar New Year. So now that you're here, how do you celebrate in the Okanagan?
It's been rather tame in comparison, but this year our little family, our small family, will have dakguk in the morning, and we'll celebrate the day with a few friends. I will bring some Korean food to the party. I'll most likely bring japchae, the sweet potato starch noodle.
Yeah, that sounds fun to me. And you said earlier, so if we were saying it in Korean, how would we say Happy Lunar New Year?
Yeah, the most common Korean New Year greeting is 새해 복 많이 받으세요.
I got to work on that.
Which means wish you lots of luck in the new year.
Yeah.
So, 새해 복 많이 받으세요.
Well, this has been fascinating, and I know that I don't know if British Columbians are aware. A lot of Koreans are now living in British Columbia, and there's a lot of interest in Korean food. So I like this idea of pairing up BC wines. Maybe you can write some more about that for us at Gizmondi on Wine. We can go deeper into it. Hey, I know that you're in the middle. You wrote the Master of Wine last year and passed a number of things. Didn't pass a couple of things, mostly timing, I understand. So you're back at it this year. Very few people in the world have it. Less than, I don't know, it's about 350 people in the world have this degree. How's it going?
A little over 400 now, yeah.
A little over 400, okay. Are you psyched about it, or are you ready for year two to try and achieve this?
Absolutely. I'm actually flying this Sunday to take my seminar in Napa. I'm super excited and nervous at the same time, but it's a good nervousness.
Yeah, I like that. I always say to the people who I know in the business, like, you got to believe in yourself. You've done all the work. You've done all the tasting. It's just a matter of setting it free when you sit down at this exam. So we wish you all the best, HJ.
Thank you so much.
Hope that you're a newly minted MW soon.
Thank you so much.
Okay, thanks for joining us today. Lovely to talk with you, and you and I got to get together and eat some Korean food.
Of course, yeah. Such a pleasure.
Thank you so much.
I'll cook you next time when you're here.
Yeah, for sure. That was H.J. Cha. She's a contributor at Gizmondi on Wine. She writes and reviews wines for us. She's a Master of Wine candidate. I'm sure she's going to pull it out sooner than later, and we wish her well. Still to come, Mike Gaiman, the managing partner of The Watson, a relatively new restaurant on the Main Street Strip in Vancouver.
There's more to come. This is BC Food and Wine Radio with Anthony Gizmondi.
Diora, the culmination of a more than 30-year vineyard-to-bottle journey in the Santa Lucia Highlands and the family-owned San Bernabe Estate in Monterey, California. Diora's fruit from their vineyard flourishes in the radiant Monterey midday sun, while refreshing breezes coax the complex flavors found in every drop. Diora, indulgence begins in the vineyard, now available at select liquor stores across BC. Find out more at diorawines.com.
Escape to Tin Horn Creek Vineyards on the captivating Golden Mile Bench in the heart of Oliver's Wine Country. Their wine shop awaits you Thursdays through Sundays from 11:30 to 4:30. Embrace the season with their Blanc de Blanc Sparkling, adding a lively note to your winter wanderings. Explore the wonders of the South Okanagan, where nature's beauty meets the art of winemaking. Plan your visit at tinhorn.com. Ready to welcome you.
One of the best things about drinking wine today is that inexpensive wine has never been better. Helping you to improve your wine knowledge and find great buys in the marketplace has been a lifelong goal of mine, because once you become a savvy shopper, you can influence retailers to start selling better wines at better prices. So learning just a little bit more about wine can improve the local selection in your neighborhood. I'm Anthony Gismondi, and I invite you to visit us at gismondionwine.com to become a savvy shopper and drink better wine.
It's BC Food and Wine Radio. Now, here's Anthony Gismondi.
Hello, British Columbia. You know, they say you have to be crazy to open a restaurant and a winery right now, but we found someone who's done and is doing it very successfully. Joining us now is Mike Gaiman. He's a managing partner of The Watson, a restaurant on the Main Street Strip in Vancouver. Mike, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, great to catch up with you. A lot of buzz about your about The Watson on Main Street. But let's just maybe get a little background from you and how you've got into this business.
Yeah, of course. I started pretty young, actually. First job I ever had, I was 16 years old and washing dishes at an Earl's in North Vancouver.
All right.
And never really left the industry. Kept doing it through high school and university, and just kind of worked in every position throughout the years. And yeah, opened my first place on my own about 8 years ago.
All right. Well, I just want to mention that Earl's thing. So what did you learn at Earl's besides how to wash dishes? Because a lot of people come out of Earl's.
They do. And actually a lot of people that I worked with at that time in high school went on to do some cool things in the industry. And they're just really well structured in terms of training and programs that they have. And, you know, I've definitely taken things that I've learned there into my own places in terms of just service standards and training programs, and as well as they're very good on the financial end of things. So you definitely learn a lot of things about what's required to make a business work.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's get to The Watson. I mean, I'm really interested how you could even open a new restaurant sort of post-pandemic. What are some of the things you thought about, and how have you gone about creating a place that people want to go to and hang out in and patronize?
Yeah, well, it's definitely a challenging time for our businesses, but I mean, I think people still do go out and still want to go out. I've been living about two blocks away from where The Watson is for 9 years, so it's definitely my neighborhood, and I just kind of look at what's going on in places and what I think is a sort of a gap in that market and what might mm-hmm. appeal to people in the neighborhood. And yeah, that's definitely what we tried to do with The Watson. I just felt like there wasn't so much of a slightly higher end bar in the neighborhood that kind of matches the current demographic. And fortunately, people have been pretty positive in their response to it in our first 6 months. So it's been a good start.
Yeah. So how would you describe The Watson? Like, you just said the word bar. So bar, restaurant, bar, like, how would you describe it?
I kind of like to think of it as like a food focused cocktail bar. So, okay, you know, like cocktail program is a big part of it, but we also spent a lot of work on the food program, and we want it to be a place where you can come for happy hour, come for dinner, come for late night drinks, and yep, kind of any sort of celebration or situation that you're going out for can kind of fit in there, I'd like to think.
Yeah, I'm just thinking that maybe post-wine festival on one of those nights, you'll still be open.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah. Definitely come by after Wine Fest.
Our guest is Mike Gaiman. He's the managing partner of the Watson. By the way, the Watson, it's an interesting story about the name of this restaurant on Main Street in Vancouver. Can you tell us a little bit about the Watson?
Yeah, so we actually back onto Watson Street, which is the laneway running along behind Main Street there. And it's just an interesting street because it's one of the only laneways in Vancouver that actually has residential addresses on it. So, and it's been around for years. The other kind of tie-in, we had a little, doing a little research, we discovered that Dr. Watson from the Sherlock Holmes books actually studied medicine at St. Bartholomew's Hospital. And our other place, Bartholomew, is actually named after St. Bartholomew, the patron saint of butchers, where we do a lot of our own house-made charcuterie and things. So there's just kind of a fun tie-in with our other business as well and the location of where the Watson is.
Very clever. The Bartholomew Bar, by the way, is in Yale Town in downtown Vancouver. How would you say, like, did you figure out that your target market was the people sort of wandering the Main Street area, or how did you set that out? Who is your target?
Yeah, I mean, Main Street's become a pretty busy destination for restaurants and bars, but there's also just like a lot of people that live around the neighborhood as well, and
yeah.
You know, as neighborhoods change over time, you know, Main Street has developed as well. And it's definitely like a trendier part of town, I would say. And there's people that live around here that like to go out and like to be out. And that's definitely who we were hoping would come.
Yeah. And I think from my point of view, it's a little bit Euro too. Like, we have so few sort of neighborhood bars or where people just go out at 5 or 6 o'clock and have a drink and talk to their, you know, see their neighbors or their friends. And Main Street has developed a bit of that vibe. And I sure wish we could get some of that over here on the North Shore, which is almost desolate of that kind of, which would be nice. Anyways, I wanted to also ask you about what have you noted about consumer behavior and changes since the pandemic? And have you had to pivot as well in terms of the way that people come to restaurants and spend money?
Well, I mean, I think people are still coming out for sure. I would say that maybe it seems people are a little bit more selective where they go and when they go. I feel like it's a little more Friday, Saturday focused than it used to be. So that's something to be aware of. I think people are sometimes saving for those nights. Mm-hmm. But I do believe if you create a good place with a good atmosphere, there are still people that want to go out and enjoy that atmosphere. And that's kind of the goal with my place is creating a vibe and atmosphere that will attract people.
Yeah. And yet one of your partners actually designed the place, which is also part of the vibe at the restaurant.
Yeah, I'm lucky to have a very talented younger sister, Erica Kolpitz, who has designed the venues, and we just loved doing the projects together, so it's been pretty great.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's talk quickly. I don't want to run out of time. So people come to the Watson. What's the food like? What give us an example of some of the food dishes and some of the cocktails and wine list, how all that works?
Yeah, absolutely. So the food program, our focus was to try to keep things slightly elevated, but also simple and approachable, kind of food that you would come and eat regularly, not just on special occasions. So we've got some kind of classic simpler dishes like a burrata and prosciutto with house-made focaccia. We've got some bison meatballs that are great. We do some lamb ribs, duck wings, and a gochujang glaze. And just so a lot of interesting share plates. And then some larger main dishes as well. Cocktails are, again, like I said, of strong focus, and we do a lot of our, I've got a really creative bar team that comes up with all kinds of things, and we change the menu seasonally, and we try to just have something on there for everybody.
And the wine list, it's a small list, but a considered list. What would you say about that?
Yeah, like wine list, we wanted to not make it massive, but, you know, have a nice variety for people, and definitely tried to keep our by-the-glass options not too pricey, which can be a challenge these days. And
yeah,
definitely like to focus on some local wines, but then have, you know, some international offerings as well to balance out the list.
Yeah, that sounds good. Just looking at some of the names like Tantalus, Lafrenz, Louis Jadot, Ex Nihilo. So there is an interesting mix of wines. What about in the when the weather gets better, any chance to be outside at the Watson, or is it all inside?
Yeah, actually, it's definitely a great place when the sun's out. We have a 20-seat patio out front,
okay,
as well as like glass sliding front windows that completely open up and really kind of open up the main space to the exterior as well. Big kind of 20-foot ceilings, so it's a really bright open room as well. So it's definitely fun in the summer. And then as it gets darker out, we dim the lights, turn the music up a bit, and get that night vibe going.
Yeah. Well, it sounds very interesting. I'm going to try and make my way up there, if not during the festival, soon after. In fact, my daughter lives about a block from this restaurant, so we better get over there and check it out. I'm sure I'm way behind in that. The Watson, just north of 15th Street on Main, and the Bartholomew Bar is in Yaletown. We've been speaking with Mike Gaiman. He's the managing partner of the Watson restaurant in Vancouver. Mike, thanks so much for joining us and sharing some thoughts on surviving in the restaurant business under the current regime, which isn't easy. We wish you well in the coming weeks and months.
Well, thanks for having me. We'll hope to see you there sometime soon.
Thank you. That was Mike Gaiman, managing partner of the Watson in Vancouver. Up next, and you won't want to miss this, you may want to stop the car and pull over, wine grower Richard Da Silva joins us to talk about yet another troublesome winter in the Okanagan and perhaps some solutions to these long-term problems that keep plaguing us in the wine business in British Columbia.
There's lots more still ahead. This is the BC Food and Wine Radio Network.
People always ask us, how do you taste? What we don't do is taste one wine in isolation. We choose a grape or a style of wine, then we taste a number of samples from around the world, so we're constantly benchmarking the quality of, say, BC Chardonnay versus Burgundy, the Sonoma Coast, Argentina, or New Zealand. That way we get a better picture of where that wine sits globally, and our readers often benefit from getting more wine for less money. I'm Anthony Gismondi. Why not compare wines with us at GismondiOnWine.com?
Visit Penticton this winter for mountain adventures in South Okanagan wine. Experience the quieter time of year at one of the nearby wineries that stay open year-round and enjoy an intimate winter wine tasting. Stop into the Penticton Visitor Center for discounted lift tickets to Apex Mountain Resort for a day in the snow. Penticton is the perfect destination for your winter getaway. Before you go, check the website for information on wine tours, tasting room hours, and webcams for current conditions. Go to visitpenticton.com.
Diora, the culmination of a more than 30-year vineyard-to-bottle journey in the Santa Lucia Highlands and the family-owned San Bernabe Estate in Monterey, California. Diora's fruit from their vineyard flourishes in the radiant Monterey midday sun, while refreshing breezes coax the complex flavors found in every drop. Diora, indulgence begins in the vineyard, now available at select liquor stores across BC. Find out more at diorawines.com.
Join Anthony Gismondi and BC Food and Wine Radio at the 45th Vancouver International Wine Festival, February 24th to March 3rd, 2024. Discover Italy at the International Festival Tastings, featuring 149 wineries from 12 countries. Tickets are on sale now. Plus, get a free tasting ticket worth up to $135 when you book a downtown hotel via StayVancouverHotels.com. Don't wine and drive. The festival runs February 24th to March 3rd at the Vancouver Convention Center and other venues. Full details at vanwinefest.ca.
This is BC Food and Wine Radio. Now, here's Anthony Gismondi. Hey, 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 hey.
Hello, British Columbia. We're back with a special shout-out to listeners on southern Vancouver Island joining us on CFAX 1070, as well as bounce stations in the north from Fort Nelson to Prince Rupert. Our guest today is Richard Da Silva, vigneron proprietor of Da Silva Vineyards. Richard's family's been farming in the Okanagan since the late 50s, and given all this talk about the deep freeze in January, I wanted to get it right from the horse's mouth, somebody who actually farms vines, and get an update on this story, which isn't a pretty picture at the moment, but we're going to find out what's going on. Richard, welcome back to the show.
Thank you for having me, Anthony. I'm glad to be back.
I just want to, there's so much hysteria out there. I just want to sort of get it straight about what's going on. And one of the things is it too early to assess the damage, or what are you hearing? What are you seeing? You know, what are your thoughts about what's happening in the Okanagan and the Similkameen?
Yeah, I think it's pretty much certain at this point from the analysis we've been doing in our own vineyards that we're going to have most likely virtually no crop this year. That is can be assessed with fairly high degree of certainty with just techniques that we have available to us. I guess the wild card is what's the damage to the plants and plant physiology, and seeing if we're going to be able to have, you know, plants that will make it through, and or do we have to replant? That won't be able to be assessed until probably April or May.
Right. I got to jump around a bit, but is this, we're talking about grapes, but what about all the other cherries and peaches and stuff like that? Same sort of story, or?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I think on the Naramata Bench, I've heard from a couple of prominent cherry growers that they're looking at maybe 20% of their crop here. Possibly less. I know up in the northern part of the Okanagan, they're looking at complete loss of crop from their assessments thus far. Specifically with soft fruits, like you said, like peaches and cherries, apples. I mean, this event will impact all tree fruits and vines in the valley, regardless of whether or not they're hybrid or vinifera or whatever, or tree fruits. It was that cold enough that it would do that damage to all these particular crops.
Yeah. You've been around forever. Your family's been farming forever. So is this a first-time event, or has it happened once before, or how would you describe what's happened this winter?
Yeah, I think for a lot of those that are specifically in the wine industry, probably the last two or three decades, if they're certainly not familiar with this particular part of our history and what it means to be cold climate. I know the year that my family first landed in 56, there was a massive frost kill or winter kill then, basically wiped out the whole BC fruit industry at that time. It happened again in the 60s. And then when, in my particular thing, I was 7 or 8 years old, was in 78, there was another one of these, probably one of the last real bad ones. Mm-hmm. And then 85. And then since 85, there's been sporadic events, but not to the damage that we were seeing in the 60s and 70s and even back to the 50s.
Yeah. A lot of chatter about what can be done. One thing that drives me crazy is that, you know, everybody's talking about hybrids. I get it. I know a bit about the modern hybrids that taste good, but tasting good is one thing, selling them is another. What do you make of all this rush to hybrid varieties and all this, like, right out of the gate?
Yeah, I think the one thing is with this event is that this event was, it wouldn't have mattered, you know, what you were planted. It was that cold that it would have, hybrid or not, you would have been fairly impacted. I think, you know, the thing goes back, the issue with this is that we had vinifera vineyards planted in the 70s that survived through the 70s. So it comes down to a couple of things. Proper sites. We had Chardonnay, Merlot, Chenin Blanc, a bunch of these varieties planted back in the late 70s that went through those fields in the late 70s and the early or the mid 80s that survived as well. But most of that was due to the way we were growing. I think that's where the lack of experience is. There was a rush in the mid-90s to go with all rootstock plants. For those that don't know, most plants are planted on a different kind of rootstock.
Yep.
But the problem with that is that when you get a winter kill, at least with a self-root, which means you just take it from the own cutting of your vine, which Washington State converted to a while back, or back when they had some harsh winter kills a number of years ago, is at least you're able to retrain the vine from the ground up.
Yeah, and save a lot of time.
Oh, save 2 years. Yeah, so most of my own personal vineyards, about 90% of them are self-rooted. So for me, I'll lose this year, but assuming that, best case scenario, I could possibly have a partial crop next year. Whereas if you're on a self-root, on rootstock, and you're dead to the union of that graft, you potentially are looking at 3 years out. So that's the difference between those two systems.
Yeah. Our guest is Richard De Silva. He's a vineyard owner and proprietor of De Silva Vineyards. Richard, Ontario has had some overflow, oversized crops in the last couple of years. But for some reason, we cannot, to use the worst term possible, import Ontario grapes when we need them in this kind of a crisis. What the hell's going on with Canadian wine? Like, it's Canada. They're in Canada. Is that not a possible solution?
Yeah, it's a very complicated topic, of course. It goes back to the way our industry was set up by the industry that was asked by the government to help create a framework. And so today, fast forward to today, we're left with one of the only countries in the wine world that have these silos of Ontario versus BC versus Nova Scotia. It's a framework it was a very self-serving, self-interest created system that's now coming back to bite us. And yeah, it's a very unfortunate situation. It's very much the way it is in Europe, as you know, and in Australia and other places, but in Canada, for some reason, the power players that created our industry created a system to protect a lot of self-interest, and now we're the industry has grown and has evolved, yet we're still left with these skeletons in the closet that are from an antiquated system to this day.
Wow, it just seems to me that this is solvable. Obviously, we're talking about taxes and all the rest of it, but the fact is that, if you open a shoe store, you can do anything you want in Canada. If you're selling grapes or wine, you can't do anything but be under the lock and key of the local monopoly or whoever it is that sets it all up. So maybe this will
be fair, I think a lot of people in our industry, we kind of look at some of the regulatory bodies to blame for this. But in fact, I think the industry needs to really look in the mirror. A lot of the initial players in this industry created the system we're in today. And the government and the regulatory bodies were looking from direction from the industry. And the industry took that as an advantage to create a system that at that time protected their own self-interest. And I have to call that out because I think it's important that we now learn from that. I think, again, there's a whole new generation of winery owners and winemakers here. The industry has evolved. It's flourished. We've gone past that. And I think it's now time to really, take an event like this has just happened to us as a lightning rod to modernize and bring our Canadian wine system in line with the rest of the real wine world. And I think that's where the golden opportunity lies here.
We're going to run out of time, but there's still a bit of time left. I want to do a couple of things. One, let's focus on De Silva now. How will you manage the next 2 or 3 years, and what are you going to do with inventories, all that sort of thing? And a lot of people are talking about Washington fruit, which I just think is a disaster if we go down that path. But what's your opinion about those two issues?
I mean, for myself, it's far be it from me to hinder someone from what they need to do to survive and feed their family. Farming is challenging at the best of times without me having to try to inject my personal opinion on that. I am obviously going to be very much more for a Canadian solution as my preferred choice if I don't have grapes. And likewise, if our friends in Ontario have no grapes, in a winter event, I can turn on and sell them grapes. So I think there's a win solution there. But yeah, you know, this, we've been here before. We know kind of what this looks like. It'll be very challenging for us. But I think it's an opportunity to showcase farming and resilience and really focus on how we can be resilient and come out of this stronger. I think you know, the farmer in me is always optimistic, and De Silva, I still think the future, the reason I'm here is still the reason I'll be here next year, is still bright. I think, yeah, nature gives us these curveballs, doing every wine region in the world, and we're not immune from it.
Yeah. Well, you said something interesting to me earlier this week about your family, the 16 family members in Oliver that were farmers. And you said that...
Yeah, there's four grandparents and 12 aunts and uncles. And I always tell people as a story, I said, look, most of them died poor and broken. I think there's a misconception by many of our fellow Canadians that wine is this luxury product. And I think we forget that there's farmers behind this, like their hands, like my family is just trying to make a living. And there's a lot of great small producers that are doing that. And sometimes we get sidetracked by some of the more shiny, you know, projects out there. But, you know, keep in mind that the vast majority are small farmers, employing a number of people here that is their livelihood. And it's important that we respect that this is a livelihood for many people.
Hmm. Well, Richard, I really appreciate you talking about this today. I mean, you know, in many ways, when I say we, I mean consumers have been asked to do a lot for the BC wine industry. And I think that when you start talking about maybe the industry needs to look inside and make some big changes as well, that would be welcomed by all of us so that we could continue to support them and they could stick around for the next 100 years. You know, next week in Vancouver at the International Wine Festival in a couple of weeks, the Italians are going to be here. Many of them, not many, but lots, have multi-generational. Some are 26 generations. I'm sure they've seen everything you could ever imagine in the economy and in weather, and they're still around. So they'd be a good source to talk to for some people who maybe, you know, need a bit of a lift.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's farming, regardless of where you are in the world, is shows, you know, it has a common thread through it and a common denominator. And, you know, I think it's there's challenges and there's great rewards as well. And I think consumers and our, you know, people here, what they want to believe in is they're supporting and being part of that journey with all of us.
Yeah. Before I let you go, Richard, what about the restaurant? Will it be open for business this year?
Yes, we do have wine for sale. So yes, come on up and visit. There's a lot of wineries up there. They're going to have those. The tasting rooms open. We're going to be open. Our restaurant's open. So we're definitely looking forward to everyone coming up and visiting us this year.
Super, Richard. Thanks so much for this overview. We'll get back to you as things develop, so that we can let our listeners know what's going on.
Absolutely, anytime, Anthony. Thank you for the time.
Thank you. That was Richard De Silva. Of course, Richard is the vineyard and proprietor, co-proprietor at De Silva Vineyards on the Naramata Bench. Folks, that's it for this week's show. Special thanks to our technical producer in Vancouver, Dwayne Bishop, assignment editor, Sherry Caleb, and director of operations, Stu Ferguson. For all of us at the show, I'm Anthony Gismondi, wishing you a great week ahead and an even better glass of wine.
That's it for today's show. This is BC Food and Wine Radio with Anthony Gismondi.